What's going on, everybody? Thank you so much for joining me here for this Saturday edition of Fantasy MLB Today. We are a Sports Ethos presentation, of course, and I'm your host, Joe Orico. You can find me over on Twitter at JoeOrico99 and also at EthosFantasyBB. That's where we post all of our new content, whether it be a podcast, article, news and notes, blurbs. Everything gets shared out from that account. That's ETHOSFantasyBB. And if you're not somebody who uses social media, you can get all that same great work right at SportsEthos.com. Guys, we are going to be going through what happened on Friday's slate and then getting into some of the more popular ads and drops from the day. But we got to start off with Seth Lugo. I think he has surprised a lot of people with how good he has been this year. He had another gem of a start yesterday. Seven innings, shutout ball. He struck out nine, did get the victory against the Tigers. We're looking at a 1.66 ERA, a 1.11 whip, 23 strikeouts over his 38 innings, which is obviously, he's not going to excel in the strikeout department, but everywhere else is looking really damn good for Seth Lugo. And the market, I don't know if they've really caught up with what we're seeing from him. He's only on 64% of Yahoo rosters, and I generally get it. Kansas City got off to a really good start. I think that they're not a team that's going to be that great throughout the course of the whole season. They're 17-10 right now, and they're in a fairly weak division, so they could surprise us. I don't see them being a team that's going to generate 90 or so wins where you could see Lugo having like 13, 14 wins. It could happen, but I don't think wins are going to be a strong suit, and neither are strikeouts, so you're probably wondering why I'm even bothering. But we're looking at now, this is the fourth season where Lugo has looked really, really good. I mean, 2021 and 2022, he was a reliever, but he put together really, really strong seasons. If you look at the supporting metrics as well, you know, in 2021, it was a 3.5 ERA and a 3.61 xFIP, so no real overperforming there. The following year, 3.60 ERA, 3.51 xFIP. Last year, it was a 3.57 ERA with a 3.76 xFIP. So those are very, very strong numbers. His strikeout rates have not been the same since he has come over to being a starting pitcher. When he was a reliever, a lot higher strikeout rates, which is generally to be expected. But even as a starting pitcher, last year it was 23.2%, which is fine. It's about average. This year it hasn't been great, the strikeout rate, but he is still really getting by. And those numbers below the surface are not as good as they have been, but they're still solid enough where I could say he is worth an add in most leagues. We're looking at, in terms of Sierra, it's 458. It's not great. 442 xFIP, 339 FIP. But he has been able to be successful this season. He's allowing a fairly low BABIP and a high left on base percentage. I don't think it's always going to be this good. And you can make the case that maybe Seth Lugo is a sell high. I just don't know what you're exactly selling him for. I think he's one of those guys who can kind of fly below the radar. And I think part of the reason why he is not really popping on those metrics is because the strikeout rate is fairly low this year. We're only looking at, to this point, a 15% strikeout rate, which is brutal, but a big component of those metrics is what you're striking, is how many batters you're striking out. Once he gets that closer to his average, which should get back over the next few starts, you'd imagine, he's not going to be popping, but, you know, 20 to 22% kind of strikeout rate, you should see those numbers start to stabilize a little bit. Now, in terms of the BABIP, in terms of the left on base, those are going to start to correct. And like I said, it's not going to be a 1.66 ERA for the season. But I think Seth Lugo is a fairly valuable back-end starter, and he should be on more than 60-some-odd percent of rosters. We should be looking at least, I would say, into the high 70s, maybe even low 80s for Seth Lugo. He's not a guaranteed must-start every single time out kind of guy. But I think a lot of the time you're going to be pretty confident, especially in the current landscape of pitchers getting injured all the time. We're going to talk about a couple more that went down yesterday. I don't know how you can be letting a guy like Seth Lugo just kind of sit on the wire, considering how solid he has been now through each of the first six starts this season. But let's move on and let's talk about Aaron Nola. We have some positive talk about Aaron Nola, and honestly, it has been a lot more positive over these last few outings. I know that throughout the offseason, people were kind of down on Nola. He comes into the year, has a bad start against Atlanta, which is not anything to really worry that much about. And then the next time out against Washington, it was a fine enough outing, but he was, you know, kind of wild with this command. I think he had four walks. So we got off to kind of a shaky start with Aaron Nola, but the last four starts, we've seen six innings, seven and a third, eight and eight. He's pitched into the eighth inning in each of his last three outings, 10, seven, and nine strikeouts respectively there. So it does appear that Aaron Nola is getting back on track. And, you know, I hate to do this, but it does feel like, you know, he does this every single time. It's the odd year, even year thing with Aaron Nola. and I know it's not analytical, it's not something where you can point to and be like, this is factual, this is why this is happening. It's not anything even close to that. But for whatever reason, when the year ends in an odd number, Aaron Nola tends to have a down year. When the year is ending in an even number, he tends to have a pretty good season. Now, there are some things that are still a little bit concerning for me with Nola. The strikeouts have gone down kind of drastically over the last three seasons, from 29.1% down to 25.5% last year, and now we're at 22.9%. Now, I do think that that is something that will, again, correct itself more. We are seeing him get back to normal there over these last three starts. Those first three starts where he had 3-4-3 in terms of strikeouts probably did weigh that down. So that's not something that'd be overly concerned about. Something to keep an eye on. You know, if he does lose a couple ticks off the strikeout rate, it would not be great for him, especially because the walk rate has gone in the wrong direction as well these last couple of seasons. It went from 3.6 up to 5.7, and now this year we're sitting at a 7% walk rate. I do think part of that does come down to that one game where he walked four batters. That's 4 out of the 11 walks for him right there. Something to keep an eye on, but generally speaking, I think Aaron Nola is a fairly safe target, and if people are still worried about anything with him, really, I think he's a good buy. It's probably not going to work out for you so well, considering, you know, these last couple of starts have been really good for him, but I do still hear people talk about Aaron Nola not in such a positive light as they would have maybe a year or two ago. So you might have a bit of a buying opportunity still. He's probably closed that window with these last couple of good starts, but I think it's always a wise idea. A lot of people don't do this. They kind of sit on their hands. I guess it depends on the player you are. I think it's always a good idea to see how your league mates are valuing players. Even if you're just shooting out a trade offer that you don't really feel is 100% even legit, like you don't really expect it to get accepted, but you can kind of throw those around just to see generally what the responses are. If you're throwing out Aaron Nola and you're trying to sell him and maybe, you know, get a round or two of value from where you drafted him, just see what the market is like in your league, because you don't know until you actually try. I've had some trades over the years. You would never really expect it to go down. I'm not a huge trader, but every now and then you do get surprised. So, I mean, maybe you're able to buy low on Aaron Nola. Maybe you're able to sell a little high on Aaron Nola. Every league is so individualized, but I think you do yourself a disservice by not just at least seeing what the market is like in your league. Not all the time. You can't be doing this after every single start with every single player, but here and there, throw around some offers and just see generally how players are valued in your league. And I think Aaron Nola is a really good candidate right now because he's someone whose value has kind of changed a lot over the last couple of weeks, really, because people were kind of down. Now they're kind of back in. I think he's a good guy to kind of just see what your league is thinking on him. But let's talk about Bailey Ober, because Bailey Ober is kind of the embodiment of patience at this time of season, right? He had one of the worst debut starts to the season I can remember against Kansas City. I believe it was 9 earned runs. He was dropped all over the place. He was dropped in a ton of leagues to the point where you're still actually seeing him available in some leagues. He's jumped back up to 88%, but this is somebody who before the year started was well over 90% rostered, and then you see a huge drop off because of a bad start. Well, since that bad start, he's been excellent. He has gone at least 5 innings in all of them, no more than 2 earned runs allowed in any of those starts. And yesterday he had another great one, 7 1/3, 8 strikeouts against the Angels. This one was 2 runs on 3 hits with 3 walks as well. He's been fantastic. And, you know, that ERA is still at 4.21 because of that awful first start. It's going to take a little while for that to fully get down again. But Bailey Ober is somebody that, again, like, there's no real move to be made here. You can add him. If he is still available, he should be added. But it's just a reminder, and I know we do this a lot, but I think it's important to mention it frequently, of how early the season still is. It's only a month into the year. And there's been a couple of really great articles and tweets that I've seen. Chris Towers wrote one for CBS just talking about how April doesn't really tell you that much at all. It's not really predictive in terms of the rest of the season. Dan Zimborski, the guy who creates the Zips projection system, I saw a tweet of his that was resurfaced, where if you were going to weigh the importance of April versus preseason projections, the importance of April should be about 6% of the equation, where you should still probably rely on the projections about 94%. So with a guy like Bailey Ober, where the projections were very good, he was ranked pretty universally as a top 35-40 pitcher. I believe I had him at 32-34, my last version of my rankings. And people threw out immediately every bit of process from the offseason just because of one bad start. So if you're seeing Bailey Ober out there still because of people who were giving up very early, he makes for a really good ad, but I think he is just a good example. Him this year, Chris Bassitt from last season of you don't just drop a guy because he has a horrible first start or even a horrible first two or three starts if he's somebody who is of this ilk, you know, top 150-ish player and occasionally pushing himself into the top 100 come the end of draft season. Just be patient. It's a very, very long season, and we still really don't know what a lot of players are going to look like. I saw people were dropping Blake Snell, and yes, there's the injury factor now, but it's like, do we not remember what happened last year with Blake Snell, how he kind of starts slow every single season? I feel like people forget these things way too often, so that's why I try and just come at you with reminders pretty regularly of just be patient. You need to be patient, or else you're going to end up dropping guys who are very valuable, and that is... that's how you lose your league. You know, there's always the talk about how do you like league winners and all this stuff. You can be a league loser if you're dropping three or four players inside the top 150 because they underperform in the first couple weeks. That's the best way to lose your league and have just no chance of coming back. But let's move on, though. Let's talk about Chris Sale. Chris Sale had yet another really good outing yesterday. Seven innings, got the victory against Cleveland. He struck out six, allowed just one earned run and one walk, and it was only two hits allowed for Chris Sale. I'm very confused as to how to even evaluate Chris Sale because he is flourishing. Like, he's been fantastic as an Atlanta Brave. There's no real doubt there. 3.69 ERA, but everything else is lower in terms of the expected numbers, the ERA estimators. 27% strikeout rate, a sub 6% walk rate. The whip is at .92. He's allowing a batting average that's sub 200. He's been amazing. Excuse me. But I don't think that, again, in the same breath as like Mike Trout having a massive game here and there, like we knew this was going to happen on a per start basis. Mike Trout's healthy, so he's hitting home runs. You know, that's not surprising to anybody. Chris Sale's healthy, so he's having good starts and he's striking batters out, getting victories. That's not surprising to literally anybody. The surprising thing would be if Chris Sale is able to throw 130, 140 innings. That's where the question is, do I bank what I've got from Chris Sale now and try and just sell him? Or do I say, okay, I'm going to take a chance that in this year where nothing makes sense, Chris Sale is going to be healthy all year? It's a tricky question, but I think at this point, there's no right answer. There's no right or wrong answer. But I think that Chris Sale is probably going to fetch you a decent return right now if you were trying to trade him based on where he is ranked, based on the production so far. He's a top 75 player according to Yahoo's rankings and probably a lot of rankings. I think that it does make sense to just, again, explore the market for Chris Sale. It doesn't mean that you have to trade him immediately, but I do think that down the stretch of the season, Atlanta's going to be very careful with him. They're not going to want to be using, and this, you know, I kind of made this argument for Ronaldo Lopez a couple days ago. Come fantasy playoffs, and this goes for a lot of teams that are going to already be kind of secured for the last couple weeks of the season, likely the Dodgers, the Braves, those types of teams, they're probably not going to be throwing their full lineups out. And this is why generally when you hear like people talking about recommended settings for head-to-head, they tell you to end the season a couple weeks early. End the season in the middle of September, even first week of September, because a lot of shit's going to go on that you're not going to be happy about. And you're going to be starting guys that are called up from AA for one random start in your head-to-head finals. And it gets very tricky the last couple weeks of the season. And part of it is because teams will be secured in playoff spots. And there will be arms that they don't want to risk. Not just arms, there will be position players sitting as well. But specifically starters, especially starters with long injury histories like Chris Sale, will likely be given, you know, an extra day between starts, or maybe they'll skip a start altogether, give you just a two or three inning outing to keep you sharp, but not really expand your energy at all. So when it comes to head-to-head leagues with guys like this, with the relievers converted to starters and guys with massive injury histories, I do think it makes sense to maybe not right this second, but at some point over the next month or so, think about trading them and wait till maybe there's a really great start. You know, Tyler Glass now is a great example. I love Tyler Glass now. I have him only on one team this year, but it's like I wish I had him everywhere at this point. He's been just so good. But I worry about the same things with him. The last couple weeks of the season, the Dodgers are likely not, like, let's say Tyler Glass now scheduled for a two-start week on the last week of the year. There's no chance he's getting that, right? Like, they're going to mitigate the risk, and that will come through limiting the innings, limiting the pitches, doing whatever they can, likely in September, to make sure that he's fresh for the playoffs. And that is going to hurt you in a head-to-head playoff sense. So if you're able to trade Tyler Glass now for another first-round player or a first-round type of SP, top 5 or 10 SP, again, you don't have to do it today necessarily, but I think it's a wise move in the long run just because I don't think they're going to get a hell of a lot of usage for playoff time. And I know not a lot of people play Roto. Roto is my preferred format because you just don't have to worry about this. you miss out on some of the excitement. And that was like with my own home league this year, I tried to get the guys into the roto mindset. The offseason was not enough time for me to convince them into doing that. I probably could have made a little bit more of an effort, but a lot going on. I didn't have a lot of time to be sitting down with the other guys in my home league and doing this. But when I tried, I got a lot of pushback because people prefer head-to-head. There's more excitement. There's the playoff aspect. It does mirror the real game more to a certain extent with the randomness, right? You get to the playoffs, and the one seed can get knocked out in the first round very easily. And that can happen in head-to-head. That can happen in real life. So people like that mirroring, but part of that also comes with the fact of you're probably going to miss out on some of this production over the last couple weeks of the season. If you're getting 130 innings from Glass now in Roto, if they're all squeezed in the first half or spread out over the whole season, you don't care. It doesn't matter. Head-to-head playoffs, that's where you can get really hurt. So a guy like Glass now, a guy like Chris Sale, I think it is wise to not like force the trade, not make it seem like you're really desperately trying to get rid of them. But I think it does make sense just to see what you're being offered. And if you're getting offered anything that's relatively close, like not even relatively close, like it has to be a pretty good offer to move off of any of them, especially off of Glass now based on how he's pitched. But I do think that when you break it down and you look at the way that the Dodgers are likely to use Glass now and the way the Braves are likely to use Sale down the stretch, I don't know that they're going to be great benefits to you come that crunch time for head-to-head. They might get you to the playoffs. I don't know that they're going to do a hell of a lot once you actually get there. So it's just something to keep in mind. Again, you don't have to do this. You don't have to trade anybody. You could ride it out because at the end of the day, it's still April. We don't really know what's going to happen, but there is definitely elevated risk with guys like Glass now and Sale as we get into the latter half of the season because the teams are going to do what they can to keep them healthy. Let's move on, though, and let's talk about Reese Olson, who has had a few really, really good starts in a row. Last night, he went 7 strong against Kansas City. 8 strikeouts, just 1 earned run, 3 walks, and 3 hits. Reese Olson is, I think, a little bit underrated. He's not somebody that I'm a massive fan of, but he's only sitting on 18% of Yahoo rosters. He's actually gone down from last week, even though there's been no real reason to do that. One bad start. He had one bad start early in April against the Pirates. And other than that, we're looking at 4 really good ones. The walk rate is a little bit higher than I'd like it to be at 8.9. But I think that he's generally kind of underrated. Do I think that he's a superstar? You got to add him. He's going to save your season? No. But again, just thinking about the way that a lot of my teams are for pitching, we've lost so many names over the last few weeks. A guy like Reese Olson, who is having success, who's not massively overperforming or underperforming anything, he looks fairly stable. 313 BABIP allowed, 70% left on base. He's got a 277 FIP, 419 XFIP. And the Sierra is, where I went right by the Sierra. His Sierra is 407. So I think he's very, very, very viable, specifically in your deeper formats. But even in a 12-team league, I think Reese Olson should be one of your options on a given week. Not to say that he is like a must-start or anything like that, but I think that he is viable enough where he should be on well over 20% of rosters. I think where he is right now at 18 is a little bit disrespectful considering what we have seen from Reese Olson this year. Again, don't get your hopes up. Like, I feel like a lot of times when I talk about a player, people will think that I'm saying their name because they're a savior or something. He's not a savior, but he had a very solid season last year over 103 innings. It was a sub-4 ERA, sub-4 XFIP, solid strikeout-to-walk numbers. I think that he deserves to be on more rosters than he currently is as a back-end SP in a 12-team league. That's where I currently see Reese Olson. Don't get carried away. But I do think that he is somebody that is kind of being undervalued a little bit at this point still. I do want to talk about Kyle Harrison because I was a pretty big fan of Kyle Harrison coming into the year. It has been a bit of a mixed bag for him, but last night he had probably his best start of the season. We got 6 innings of shutout ball against the Pirates, 7 strikeouts, no walks, and he allowed 5 hits. This one is a tricky one for me. I have him in a few leagues, and I've been starting him. I've been generally happy with what I've gotten, but it hasn't blown me away either. The thing is, you didn't pay a lot for Kyle Harrison. You paid like a post-200 price for him. So it's not a situation where you're really expecting that much to begin with. You weren't drafting Kyle Harrison thinking you were getting an ace-level pitcher, but what you've gotten back is somebody who's got a very good walk rate, about an average strikeout rate. He's got a 409 ERA with all of those supporting metrics that I like to talk about, the FIPs, the XFIPs, the Sierras, they're all lower than his ERA, which shows you that he's probably underperforming a little bit. The 330 BABIP allowed is a little bit high. Stranding 77% of batters is also a little bit high, but nothing crazy, like maybe 2-3% above average there. The BABIP should come down a little bit, and that will probably benefit him to some extent. Now, the walk rate may go up again. It's probably not going to be sub 4% for the season, but I think Kyle Harrison is a very, very underrated option. He's fallen 6% over the last week on Yahoo, down to 67. You know, that infield defense has improved in San Francisco, so that's something that's always been, you know, something that you can hold against San Francisco's pitchers, is that there's just garbage defense behind them. He's not a massive ground ball guy, but it just does make it a little bit more enticing to roster these San Francisco pitchers. And I think he is a good example of somebody that's being dropped a little bit too prematurely. You're still getting good strikeouts. You're getting good expected stats. I think that people moving on from Kyle Harrison are going to end up regretting it probably. At this point, he should be on more than 70% of roster. 67 and trending downwards just doesn't feel right for a guy who's done what he's done with the pedigree and with the skills that he has. Let's keep it going with a few injuries to report on. And the first one is a pretty sad story. It's Wade Miley. He's going to be undergoing Tommy John surgery and will miss the rest of the season. Obviously, this is potentially a career-ending surgery at age 37 for Wade Miley. He says, "I've always said I wanted to go out on my own terms. I still feel like I've got more in the tank." At his age, coming off of a major procedure like this, it's hard to envision him coming back. Maybe he gets a shot. You know, stranger things have happened, but I think we can probably say that Wade Miley is likely done. If you're holding him in any dynasty leagues, I think it's the time to cut bait. Obviously, redraft, it's well beyond the time to cut bait. He had been pretty bad to start the season, only the first two appearances, but it had not looked good. Walking more batters than he's striking out. It's not really promising stuff, but I mean, we have to shout out what Wade Miley's done over the last couple of fantasy seasons for us, because he's been a hero. I'm sure there are some people who have, you know, the term league winner gets thrown around, but I'm sure there are people who picked up Wade Miley and he, you know, took him a long way towards winning their leagues over the last couple of seasons. So in 2021, he threw 163 innings of a 3.37 ERA. That's fantastic. I mean, that is just awesome. I can't remember where we were on Wade Miley in 2021, but he didn't pitch a hell of a lot in the COVID shortened season. Before that, he was pretty solid. So maybe, I can't remember the ADPs from 2021 at this point, but he did a lot for you there with a 3.37 ERA. 2022, only 9 games, 8 of them were starts, but a 3.16 ERA for those who picked him up for that stretch. You got some good production. And then as recently as last season, 2023, you got 23 starts out of him, 120 innings, with a 3.14 ERA and a 1.14 whip. Awesome stuff. I mean, this year, I don't think there were as many people who were expecting that much. I drafted him once or twice, not really expecting a hell of a lot, just kind of as some depth, but I do think it's worth shouting out what he has done over the last couple of seasons here, in case this is the end for Wade Miley, because it certainly does look like it probably is. Let's talk about Jesus Luzardo now. He does appear to be the next guy who will be undergoing Tommy John surgery. He was placed on the 15-day injured list with left elbow tightness. Maybe I'm jumping the gun there. Maybe he doesn't need Tommy John. It just feels like that's generally been the course of progression this season. Elbow tightness, injured list, Tommy John. It feels like rinse and repeat this season a lot. I wouldn't be cutting Luzardo yet. I've seen a lot of people are already preemptively cutting him, and it'll be interesting to see what NFBC players do on this weekend's Fab run. He's dropped to 87% on Yahoo. I think it's probably a little bit early, but at the same time, we probably know where this is heading. He's going to be out for, at the very least, the next few weeks, and we're probably going to get a bad update that he's going to end up having surgery. And I don't mean to be a pessimist. It's just when you have these kind of updates, elbow soreness, IL, it's usually a sign that you're going to end up having Tommy John surgery. But it might be more of like a Nick Pivetta situation where, you know, you shut down for a little while and you start to ramp up, try and work through it. It doesn't usually work out that way either. The Kyle Bradishes of the world, the Tristan McKenzies, the guys who are pitching with injuries in their elbow, it generally doesn't last very long. It generally doesn't work out. DeGrom is another example from last year, trying to pitch through it. It's generally not a good sign, but I think it's probably a little bit too early to be cutting him as well. I'm very interested to see if NFBC players start to cut bait this weekend, assuming we don't get an update. Because if we get an update today, one way or the other, that will really tell us. But as of right now, just on the IL with elbow tightness, you could go either way in terms of a hole or a cut, because there are people who got out ahead of the Spencer Strider news, cut him a week before we really knew, which again was kind of crazy, because if you hear that Strider is just going to be like out for a month and then coming back, you're going to be like distraught that you've cut your first rounder. It's a little different with Lizardo. And I don't really know what the update is going to be. I'm just basing it off of everything else that we've seen so far this year. And generally speaking, once guys do have elbow problems, it's not usually good. It's generally a lengthy absence, and you can probably cut him. But I think at the same time, there's no real rush to do it either. If you hold on an extra week, you might get some news that, you know, it's a little bit of tightness. They're going to shut him down for a couple weeks, and we're going to ramp him back up. You don't want to be the guy who cut him before you hear that, but at the same time, if you cut him now, you might be able to get out in front of a nice pitching ad that you won't be able to do if you hold on to Lizardo. So it's a tricky situation. I think generally you got to hold because, again, we might get positive news. Not that I'm expecting it, but if you're cutting, you better be damn certain that you're missing out on the rest of the year of Lizardo. The other aspect of it is that Lizardo has not been good at all this year. Jesus Lizardo has been pretty dreadful. So people will look at both of those things, and there is probably some correlation. I don't think Jesus Lizardo just sucks now. I think there's probably the fact that he's been pitching with an injury in his arm has not been helping him. Even that, though, he hasn't been horrible. I know he has a 6.58 ERA. He's getting screwed a little bit in terms of his strand rate, in terms of his expected numbers. He's not this bad. I think we all know he's not this bad. He has not had the command this year or the strikeout rate. It does lead me to believe that there's probably something a little more ominous going on in his arm. But I think the correct move at this point is to probably just wait for the next update. And then if you're holding him an extra 5 days, 4 days, 3 days, even if it's a week, I think that's wiser than cutting him now, hearing tomorrow that they're actually going to be, you know, keeping him around, and then you try and get him back and you're paying a big bid or your top waiver priority or something. I think you just exercise patience for a couple days and hope for the best, but it looks like we're probably not going to get any great news. Let's talk about Zach Gallen. This one is also kind of interesting. A totally different type of injury here, but he was removed in the sixth inning yesterday after he had some right hamstring tightness. I had no idea what this was when he first got pulled. It was fairly concerning, just based on the way that all these other pitchers have gone down this year. But the news this morning from Torrey Lovello is that they expect Zach Gallen to make his next start, which is just about the best news I possibly could have heard. Hamstring spasms are what they called it, so this is not anything that I think we should be too concerned about, but just something to keep an eye on, that it's a possibility that Zach Gallen might not make his next start. Again, it's going to be kind of a tricky one for people in weekly formats. And honestly, he might just be a sit regardless because they're facing the Dodgers. So this is a tricky one. Zach Gallen is probably your ace. He's maybe your second starting pitcher. You got the hamstring shit going on, and you got the Dodgers. The Dodgers on any given night, you know, I started Chris Bassitt last night in all my leagues against the Dodgers because Bassitt's been good. He's a fighter, competitor. He usually does well against all teams. And I think it was 7 earned runs in 2 2/3. So Bassitt's not in the same caliber of pitcher as Zach Gallen, but the Dodgers can really get to you on any given night, especially if you're not quite at 100%. It's a little bit concerning. I think I would probably lean towards sitting him next week, in all honesty. Daily lineup leagues, you have a bit more time to see where he is health-wise because he's scheduled to pitch on Wednesday. We don't know what he's going to look like over the next couple days. Could get some updates one way or the other. But I think I'm leaning towards sitting him at this point. You know, there's very few pitchers that I'm confident starting against the Dodgers. There's probably maybe 10 or 15 starters in all of baseball, and Gallen generally would be one of them, maybe 15 to 20. But, you know, I'm just not really going to want to force it when he's dealing with an injury and it's this caliber of offense. So it's going to be an interesting question, but I think I'm going to default in the league where I have him towards sitting him. Let's talk about Jackson Holliday. We're going to get into the ads and drops, and he is among the drops, but let's talk about Jackson Holliday getting sent back to AAA. This is not good. This is kind of the best way I can describe it is not good, right? But I don't think it's anything to be overly concerned about either. We see this with a lot of big leaguers who come up. Mike Trout, Mike Trout, if you go look at his rookie numbers in his first season, I believe it was 2011 when he was like 23 games or 24 games. He looked like shit. He looked awful. You would never have thought that Mike Trout was going to amount to anything from watching him in those few weeks. The prospect pedigree, et cetera, but I remember having MLB The Show 12, MLB The Show 2012, and Mike Trout hadn't broken out yet. He was like a 72 overall player in that game, 72 overall player, and I still have the game. I don't ever play it or anything, of course. It's so old, but it just goes to show you, and again, you shouldn't read too much into MLB The Show ratings, but people didn't think a hell of a lot of Mike Trout after his first 20 games either, and I don't even think we've hit 20 games for Holiday. It's like 16 or something, 15. It's not been good. He is 2-for-34. He scored 5 runs, 1 ribby. He did not hit a homer or steal a base. But that batting average sits at .059. The question is, do you drop Jackson Holiday? Do you hold him? What's the story here? So I think in shallower formats, in 10 and 12 team leagues, you're probably pretty, well, not even probably, it's a fairly easy move to cut Jackson Holiday at this point. Question for me is 15 teamers in NFBC style formats where you don't have a hell of a lot you're dropping him for. There might be the odd nice player that comes into the pool here and there. Generally speaking, 15 team mixed leagues, or you know, let's say you're in an AL only, same style, 12 team AL only. There's not a lot you're dropping him for if you have him. So I think you can make the case that, you know, why don't I just hold on, and then he'll probably be back up again before long, and then I'll likely be getting some production from him and not just, you know, picking up the backup shortstop for some team and hoping that I get, you know, 7 at-bats in a week, because sometimes that's how bad it is in an AL-only league. If you're dropping Jackson Holiday, not even just in an only league, in any format, you better have somebody that is a really, really viable option to cut him for. In 15-teamers, there are some decent enough pieces. But I think you can make the case that you might as well hold on for a couple weeks and see what you get. I heard a lot of people talking about Jackson Holiday's projections. The projections suck. They're awful. If you look at Steamer, and these have been adjusted now since he's been sent down, but Steamer projects him for 66 more games, 4 homers, and 4 steals. The Bat X, which famously hates rookies, Derek Carty is not a fan of rookies, although it's his formula. It's not him in particular. 6 homers and 8 stolen bases is what the Bat X projects with a .244 batting average over 94 games. That's pretty bad. Like, that's pretty bad stuff, right? That's what you're getting in a couple of weeks from the average player in terms of homers and steals. Not from the average player, but 6 homers and 7 steals. I mean, Ellie did that over the course of a week, right? So it's, I mean, you can't compare everybody to Ellie, but it's not great, essentially, is what I'm saying. It's not great. But I don't know how much you want to read into those projections because they don't have a lot to draw on. They have minor league data. I don't think that the Bat would use college data. I don't really know all the ins and outs of it, if Derek has even told people what goes into all the ins and outs of it. But there's not a lot for it to go off of here. We're talking about over the course of his minor league career, what, 400 at-bats last year, something like that. There's not really a lot of data, and a lot of the time you'll see this with foreign players coming over from Korea or Japan or Cuba, rookies. They don't really get a fair shake in the projections. Now, you're probably thinking, Joe, I mean, it looks like they were pretty spot on. A couple of homers, couple of steals. He's looked like shit so far, so maybe that's accurate. But it's only 34 at-bats. Anybody reading anything into 34 at-bats is probably fooling themselves. If it's an established player, if it's a rookie, there's not much you can really take from it one way or another. There's just not. If it's a pitcher who's faced 34 batters, if it's a batter who's had 34 at-bats, like there's just really not a lot that you can take in the long term from that. This is not who Jackson Holiday is. He struck out 50% of the time, which is just an absurd number. He's always been about 20%. He only walked 5% of the time, and he's usually about a 15 to 20% walk rate guy. He won't be in the bigs, but he's been a massive walk rate guy in the minor leagues. I'm willing to say that he goes down. He probably spends 3 weeks in the minor leagues. Now he's seen, and there was a great quote from Mike Elias yesterday, now he has seen what he is up against. You know, throughout his entire life, Jackson Holiday has been the best player on every field he's ever been on until 2 weeks ago. Now he has seen the way that pitches come at you in the majors. Those major league curveballs and sliders are a lot different than you're seeing across the minor league level, which he progressed at an alarmingly fast rate. Jackson Holiday is born in 2003. He's 20 years old. he's not fully ready yet. And you can make the argument that he might not be fully ready this year either. But I think you give him a few weeks down to the minor leagues to kind of work on a couple of those things that he saw he needs to work on in the big leagues. And I'm not sure if it's exactly the off speeds or what it is that is really tripping him up. But I know that he's not this bad, and I know that you give him a few weeks to work on. I don't know this, but I think if you give him a few weeks to work on the things that he was lacking at the big league level, he'll come back up and he'll look a lot better. Will that be a first-round player? Will he follow in the steps of Bobby Witt and Julio and Corbin Carroll and end up as the seventh-ranked player this year? I'd be willing to bet my house and my car that he will not do that. But at the same time, there's still probably more value than what you're seeing in the projections, because I think they're formed off of incomplete data for a guy like Jackson Holliday, where there's really not much data to go off of. I think he's really good. I think he will get better. If you're cutting him right now, I'm fine with it, especially if you're talking about a 12-team mixed league or a 10-team mixed league where there are just so many options on the waiver wire that it's fine. It's like, okay, if Jackson Holliday comes back up and he's good, it's okay, but I've just found Willy Adames, probably not Willy Adames, but there isn't 10-team leagues. There's a lot of shortstops on the waiver wire. Maybe it is Willy Adames. There's a lot of value. So in those shallow formats, I don't have a problem cutting Jackson Holliday. Once you're getting into like deep 12s, 15-teamers, I think you need to have a really good option there to cut him for. Because once he comes back up, and I think it'll probably be, I think worst case will be a month he's down. Once he comes back up, I think he'll be a little bit different. I mean, and again, this is gut feeling. This isn't me looking at the strikeout rates in the big leagues and saying this is going to come down for sure because of anything. I just think that over time, he will get better. He has always been elite at every level. He now knows a little bit more about what he needs to do at the big league level. It's, again, still very, very small, 36 plate appearances, 34 at-bats. There's not a lot you can read into it, but Jackson Holliday now has more of an idea of what he's up against. I think you give him a few weeks or even a month to figure that out. He comes back up and he looks a lot better than what we've seen, and I think you can get double-digit homers and steals out of him. I don't think it would be shocking at all if he goes for 12 homers and 12 steals and hits 260, which is a hell of a lot different than 6 homers and 7 steals and hits 240, especially in those 15-teamers, and especially because he's in a very good lineup. That lineup is excellent in Baltimore, and they're just constantly adding pieces, whether it's Couser, Westberg, whoever. These guys are starting to really come along, and that core is incredible. Jackson Holliday, even just as a 7-9 kind of guy, I think there could be quite a bit of value there. I'm not so sold on him that I think that you have to hold him regardless of anything, but I do think that there are better days coming ahead for Jackson Holliday, and if you are cutting him in those 15-teamers, it better be for somebody with some staying power, because I do think that he will come back and he'll look a lot better, and I could be completely wrong. There's been some tough performances from rookies we've seen so far this year, but I think that there are definitely better days ahead, and I think they're coming this year. Will he fully blossom in 2024 as a fantasy player? No. I think we're probably at least a year away from that. Jackson Holliday's price next year will be really really interesting to see, but I think once we're talking about the later part of the 2020s, Jackson Holliday is going to be incredible. I think that that talent is still there, and it could pop out at any point. Nobody thought, not really many people thought, we'd see Julio and Bobby Witt and Carroll return that first-round value when they did. I don't think that the profile for Holliday is as safe as those guys, but generally speaking, you could probably get a top 150 season out of Jackson Holliday, and it wouldn't shock me. Like I would be a little surprised, but if he comes back up and he's a different guy and he hits 15 home runs, steals 17 bases, I wouldn't be shocked by it either. There's so much raw talent. He could put it together at any point. And I think now that he knows what he's up against, not that he didn't before, but now that he's seen it firsthand, I think that we're in a much better position for him to have success at the big league level going forward. All right, let's talk about some of the most added and dropped players of the day. Number one with a bullet, Mitchell Parker, up to 50%. This is why we were talking about adding him last week when he was like 10, 12, 15%. You might have to get ahead of it, and you would have had to get ahead of it, but this is the thing. People will wait until the day before a start to pick up the player, and by that point, you're dealing with so much more competition in your league. Everybody's looking for those green check marks on Yahoo or whatever site you're on to see who's starting, and they're seeing, oh my God, he's facing Miami. We were talking about this a week ago because this matchup was just glaringly obvious that Miami sucks. Mitchell Parker has just ran through the Dodgers and the Astros to start his career, and he needs to be added for this game. again, like I said earlier in the week with Mitchell Parker and anybody in terms of a weekend matchup for head-to-head, don't start them unless you need them. If you have a 2-1-3 ERA and your opponent has a 6.25 ERA, similar innings, like there's no need to pitch anybody this weekend unless you're really thinking about strikeouts or you're thinking about wins. But, you know, if your ratios are looking really good, I don't know that I'd start really anybody. It depends on your matchup. If you're very, very close, you're not going to be sitting those studs. You're not going to be sitting Glass now today, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But I think it's something we don't think about nearly as often as we should on these weekends, especially for head-to-head, only for head-to-head, really. We'll just start our guys because, you know, Corbin Burns is pitching today. I got to start Corbin Burns. But if you're up by 3 runs in the ERA and you're up by like a full point in whip, there's no real need for it. So just a reminder there. But if you are going to stream somebody today, I think Mitchell Parker is probably number one for me based on what he's done and based on the matchup he's got today. Brenton Doyle, we talked about him a little bit over the last week. Really liked what we've seen out of him. He's got 16 runs, 8 ribbies, 3 homers, and 4 steals. Last year we saw 10 homers and 22 stolen bases, so it's not like he's just coming out of nowhere in terms of some fantasy value. He did bat 203 last year. He's batting 330 this year. That's not going to stick. But I think he is a decent short-term add if you need an outfielder. If you're looking for a bat for today, they're playing in Mexico. And that game total, I believe, is at 17.5. It's expected to be a massive run environment, as we saw last... What was it, Mexico last year? I believe it was Mexico last year, where we saw the Padres and... I forget who it was. The Padres and somebody. But it was like a 17-12 game. Was it Padres and Dodgers? I can't remember now. But in any event... If you need a little bit of offense today or for the next couple days in general, you should be looking at Houston and Rockies kind of fringe bats because the environment in that stadium, it's like Coors Field on steroids. So if you need a little bit extra offense, I think Brenton Doyle is the number one pickup for today. He's up to 30 or 29% rostered on Yahoo. He's been added almost 10,000 times today. I think he's a really, really smart ad for this weekend. Might get a home run and a couple steals out of him, or maybe even a couple home runs and a couple steals based on that field they're playing in. I like him quite a bit. Jose Soriano is also being added up quite a bit. I've loved what I've seen from him recently. He had a great outing last time out at Great American Ballpark, nonetheless. 6 shutout innings, 7 strikeouts. Time before that, it was 1-run ball over 5 innings against the Rays. He gets a good matchup against the Twins, who are not doing terribly well right now. There are some bats that kind of worry me in that lineup a little bit, but generally speaking, like they're a 99 WRC plus for the season. They're just pretty average, and the way that Soriano's going, I think that he is probably my number 2 streamer for the day. That's at 9:30 tonight against the Twins. I think he's a really good option. Michael Lorenzen is being added up quite a bit as well for his start today against Cincinnati. This one's at home. I don't love it. I think Lorenzen's all right, but he's nothing really to write home about. You're not going to get massive strikeouts at all. You're in a decent spot for a win, but Cincinnati's been doing some pretty good things recently. I don't know that I would really necessarily even say Lorenzen's the favorite in that one. I don't know. Like, let me just check out the betting line for that game and see who is favored. It's ever so slightly Texas at minus 115. He's facing Hunter Green, who is a blow-up candidate on any given start, but I just think that Lorenzen's a little bit too risky for me on the average matchup, especially in a head-to-head weekend streaming situation. Not a guy that I'd be running out to pick up. A guy that I think is kind of interesting, though, if you're looking for some ratio help, is Cole Irvin. He gets the revenge game today going up against his old squad in Oakland. He's coming off of a very good start against Kansas City. A couple of good starts in a row, really. Kansas City and Minnesota. Solid, solid pitcher. He's not going to give you a lot of strikeouts, but I think, generally speaking, it's a good opportunity for a win in that matchup, and he should be able to help you out with ratios a little bit as well. Oakland is not doing well. They lost Zach Geloff. Was it yesterday or the day before? He was placed on the IL with an oblique strain. I believe it was a strain they called it. Yeah, it was an oblique strain. So they're missing one of their best pieces of the lineup right now as well. There's not a lot that scares me there. I think Cole Irvin is a pretty strong candidate as a streamer. And another guy as well that I like is Casey Mize. Casey Mize has been really solid this year. He gets Kansas City, who they can be scary on a given day, but I don't really fear them. I respect them. This is a Justin Mason, Paul Spohr one. I don't fear them, but I respect them. I think that, again, it's a situation based on what you need today, what you need for this weekend. But if you're looking for a potential win, if you're looking for some ratio help, I think Casey Mize is probably probably your best option that you're going to find today. Somebody I do want to mention as well is JD Martinez as a potential add for a lot of people, specifically on Yahoo, where he's got the outfield eligibility. There are some formats where he's just a utility-only player. If you're getting that outfield eligibility, that's really nice. He came back a couple days ago, or yesterday, I should say, slotted into the fifth hole in the lineup, went 2-for-4 with a ribby. He's 66% rostered. He's jumped up 9% from last week, so if you want JD Martinez, should be getting him now, but that's a nice, nice piece of what should be a decent enough lineup going forward where he will be able to probably get you close to, you know, 90-some-odd ribbies, 25 home runs. There's a lot of value in JD Martinez, and I think that leaving him on waiver wires doesn't make a lot of sense. Go take a look and see if he's available in your league. Let's get to the drops. Number one with a bullet today. Oh, I shouldn't say with a bullet. It's not like he's drastically number one, but it is Jose Buhto. He took the loss against the Cardinals yesterday. 4 runs on 4 hits with 3 walks over 4 2/3. He did get 4 strikeouts as well, 4 being the big number there for him. I don't know that he's somebody I'd be rushing to cut. I think that you can probably keep him around. He's facing the Cubs next week. That's a fine matchup. It's actually kind of a good matchup at this point with no Bellinger, no Seiya Suzuki, Nico Horner, who's at this point probably the best piece of the offense. I mean, maybe Michael Busch. I don't know. They're just not really that scary to me. Nico Horner started to turn it around a little bit, but I'm not really that scared of your best bat at this point as a contact hitter. I know you can mention maybe Michael Busch, who's been doing pretty well, but he's also kind of cooled off a little bit. They're not a team that really scares me. I think that you could pretty safely use Buhto in that matchup against the Cubs, and I doubt it's really going to hurt you too much. Trevor Williams is also among the most dropped players. He had a decent outing yesterday, no decision against the Marlins. 1 run on 5 hits with 2 walks over 5 innings. He only struck out 1, and that's kind of a thing with Trevor Williams, is that you're never going to get a lot of strikeouts. Last year was 111 strikeouts in 144 innings. We have 19 of them so far through 26 2/3. I don't think he's that special. If you use him as a streamer yesterday, you got decent enough line, 180 ERA, 140 whip. The 140 whip's not great, but you'll take 5 innings of 1-run ball, generally speaking. But yeah, I think that he's a pretty easy cut at this point. Luis Gil, I think it's format situation dependent. Like 15-teamers are not cutting Luis Gil at this point. Luis Gil, excuse me. But I don't know that he's somebody that in a 12-teamer or 10-teamer I would be holding on to really either. There's good strikeout upside, but the command really does worry me there. I think the strikeouts are probably enough to keep me holding on and then using him as a streamer off my bench in the right matchup. He gets Baltimore this week. Probably going to be a sit for me, but that doesn't mean just because you're sitting him that you got to cut him. It's a tough matchup, but I think that generally he is still somebody that I'm going to be keeping on my roster outside of like maybe 10 teamers. If it's a 12 teamer and deeper, I think Luis Gil's got to stay on your teams for now. Cody Bradford, this one is not good. He was diagnosed with fractured ribs. It's a stress fracture. I don't know how long he's going to be out for. They say it's at least a month. I don't even know if there'll be a spot in the rotation when he's back, because that's probably lining up pretty well with when Scherzer's going to be back. I just think this is a situation where you can probably cut Cody Bradford. You got some great contributions out of him. 19 1/3 innings with a 140 ERA and the .62 whip, 17 strikeouts and 3 victories. He did great stuff for you, but I think at this point you can pretty happily just say, okay, I'm going to have to cut him because there's not really a role. He's injured. I don't have space on my IL. There's a lot of reasons that Cody Bradford probably is not worthy of a roster spot at this point. I do want to mention Heston Kjerstad as well. He played the first game, went 0-for-4, and then he sat versus a lefty and a righty. We're looking at 3 consecutive games, including today, where he's out of the lineup. And this is what I was talking about a few days ago, and I was kind of worried as I was saying it that I was going to look foolish, because I don't know what the Orioles, I don't know what the hell they do with these prospects. Why bother calling him up to sit on the bench? But that was my concern, that they're going to call him up, he's going to be on the bench, he's going to be a platoon bat, and we're going to see people that are just adding him simply because of the prospect pedigree, which does make sense. Like I said at the time, he's worth a speculative add, but don't get too attached. Get ready to cut him. And we're seeing that already. People are already saying enough is enough. He's been dropped in 1,500 leagues today. You can't have a guy on your lineup in 10-team, 12-team leagues, even in 15s really, where you have no idea if he's going to play any given day. Kjerstad sitting against lefties, sitting against righties. I don't know what the plan is, but I don't think that you're going to miss out on a lot if you cut him. There's a lot of power in the bat, sure, but I just don't think he's going to play enough really to make it worth your while, especially in those 10 and 12 teamers. If it's a 15 teamer, I'd give him another week because maybe he does, you know, maybe there's an injury, maybe there's something that happens. I don't know. But 10 team leagues, there's so much value on the wire. I think you'd be missing out holding on to Heston Kjerstad. But guys, that will do it for us today. I appreciate all you guys hanging out here on this Saturday. I've been doing more Saturday shows as opposed to Friday. The reason generally being that I do a lot of recaps. Thursday's slates are usually not the greatest. This week wasn't that bad. It was like 10 games or something, but I like to talk on the Saturday. Also gets to, allows me the chance to kind of break up my break. Usually I don't record Saturday and Sunday, but I'm kind of itching to record on those days. So I take the day off on Friday, record Saturday, day off on Sunday, back on Monday for the rest of the week. So I've kind of liked that routine we've been in. I hope you guys are all right with that adjustment. If you're used to listening on Friday, I do apologize, but we'll still mix it up. There will still be Friday shows here and there. But if you got any questions, any comments, concerns, anything like that, JoelRico99 over on the Twitter, EthosFantasyBB as well. That's where we post all of our new podcasts, articles, blurbs, everything on the baseball side. And then, of course, we have SportsEthos.com, which is where you get everything right from the source. Guys, we'll be back again on Monday. But until then, enjoy your weekend and take care.